Hello, I'm Dean Welty, along with Rita Dunaway, welcoming you to another session of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. Our usual host, Dr. John Sloop, is on assignment with his family, but will be back with us in 2 weeks. Now, as the title of our program suggests, and for those of you who are regular listeners, we are continuing to focus on hot-button issues in our culture that have become lightning rods for dissent and for division, and then turning to what we can do to help bring salt and light to the conversation. And that is why we are especially pleased to have as our guest today Senator Emmett Hanger, who represents approximately 200,000 people living in the 24th Senate District of the Virginia General Assembly. And that district covers all of Augusta, Greene, and Madison counties, including Stanton and Waynesboro, plus parts of Rockingham and Culpeper counties. So I know that many of our listeners live in your district. Senator Hanger has represented the Valley in the Virginia legislature for nearly 30 years, first in the House of Delegates from 1983 to 1992, and then in the Senate from 1996 until the present time. Before that, he served in the U.S. Army, obtaining the rank of captain, as well as commander of the Harrisonburg National Guard. He was first elected to public office in 1979 as Commissioner of the Revenue for Augusta County, the first elected Republican in Augusta County since Reconstruction. Senator Hanger, you stand in the epicenter of the public square where faith and culture do meet and where they often collide. I know you have much to share, and we welcome you to the program.
Well, thank you, Dean and Rita. It's certainly a pleasure to be with you all here this morning and to talk some of the issues.
Senator Hanger, why don't you just start out by telling us a little bit about yourself, your background, and why you decided to run for office and landed yourself in the General Assembly?
Sure. I'm a lifelong resident of the Valley, and at an early age became involved in a lot of different activities. Fort Defiance High School, then JMU, Madison College. Involved in a lot of church activities, Ruritans, community service, and for whatever reason, it appeared that a lot of the things that I became involved with in people, I ended up in leadership positions. So that really gave me a base to evolve into politics. I became involved in politics actually in the mid-late 70s as I joined the Republican Party then. And the Republican Party back then was like, you know, like going to a Ruritan meeting or a church social. It was just a lot of nice guys, and you know, it seemed like they were the ones with the white hats on. So that was where I acclimated to.
That's what we call discernment.
So, at any rate, I have my roots are here in the Valley, and so I appreciate the culture here in the Valley, and I'm somewhat protective of that in rural Virginia. That has shaped a lot of my work activity, and as Dean indicated there, I've had an opportunity to serve in numerous capacities, first as Commissioner of Revenue, 9 years in the House of Delegates. Then I was out for a while, so I've been back going on 20 years. When I complete this term, it will be 20 years in the Virginia Senate, which is allowing me some opportunities for leadership statewide now.
Sure.
So I'm trying to use that effectively.
Yes.
To help not only our immediate area, but all of rural Virginia. And rural Virginia really is Virginia.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that really defines what Virginia is about.
That's how I think about Virginia anyway.
You know, I wasn't raised in the Valley, but what I know of your reputation, you spent some time on the basketball court as well. Is that correct?
Right. Actually, you know, I came from a family where no one in my family had even graduated from high school before. My folks had gone through the seventh grade, and so that was, I thought, as the ultimate achievement. So I was on a vocational track early on, and I was asked to come down to Madison when they were building the men's program to play some basketball. So I did. At any rate, I ended up having to work. Back then, there was not much in the form of scholarship money, so I ended up, after playing a little bit of basketball and enjoying it, they ended up having to work then. So, and of course, over the years, you tend to embellish things, and, you know. So, yeah, I was right in the middle of it there at the beginning of the JMU program.
Well, on a personal note, too, I saw on your website that you claim to have enough grandchildren to fill up their own voting precinct.
Uh-huh.
How long have you been married, and how many children and grandchildren do you have?
I've been married for 40 couple years, but I have five children. Four of them were married, and so they're providing me with lots of little munchkins, and so I appreciate those.
And one of those children, at least, perhaps more, is very active politically as well with Congressman Goodlatte's staff.
Right. My oldest daughter, Shelley, is an attorney, as is Rita here, and she has fashioned her career in Washington. I don't know why, but she currently is serving as the chief of staff for the Judiciary Committee.
Yes.
So a lot of hot button issues passing through there these days.
Wow, I bet that's an exciting job these days.
Well, in fact, if we don't run out of time, I want to mention something about Congressman Goodlatte. He's just signed on to a very important bill as a part of the Judiciary Committee and on his personal status as well. So we just really appreciate the work that she and he are doing together. Well, some of our audience may not realize that a lot of the work that you do in the Virginia General Assembly happens in committees.
Yes.
Now, according to your website, you serve on 5 of those Senate committees and at least 15 committees, subcommittees, commissions, and boards. Can you tell us a little bit about that work and how you handle situations where you're in the middle of competing priorities? Well, let me just give you one example. Your work to clean up the Chesapeake Bay.
Right.
That can put you at odds, I would assume, with Valley farmers who are forced to bear the brunt of many of these new environmental regulations, keeping in mind that Augusta and Rockingham counties are the two largest farming communities in Virginia. So how do you decide, as an example of your committee work, who wins and who loses?
Okay. Well, that's an interesting question. I do serve as chair in the Senate of the Agriculture, Conservation, and Natural Resources Committee, and also am involved in numerous activities related to that. And I've served a couple terms as chair of the Chesapeake Bay Commission, which is involves Maryland, Pennsylvania, the District of Columbia, in addition to Virginia. I became involved initially because of a desire to protect the agriculture industry in Virginia. And quite frankly, I think we've been successful in that. And even though it's characterized sometimes now as there being a big debate and farmers being at odds with what needs to happen, I don't see that at all.
Hmm.
Quite frankly, we are making tremendous strides in the agriculture community in putting in place best management practices to basically clean the waters. And yeah, I find the best conservationists in Virginia are farmers.
Hmm.
And what we're over the last couple of years in particular, we've allocated additional funds, even in tight budget times, even this past year. I worked and we were successful in getting additional dollars to help farmers fence cattle, as an example, out of stream beds. I do have a problem with some of those who use, and right now, in fact, the Chesapeake Bay Foundation, which typically I find we can agree on some things and disagree on others, I'm having a bit of a problem with their latest activity where they filed suit in order to force our hand on the stream exclusion, because quite frankly, the farmers are engaged and we're working just as hard as we can to accomplish that goal. Obviously, in the political arena, you have to balance things and you have to sometimes compromise on what is doable versus what people want to snap their fingers and happen overnight. So,
well, you have a reputation for being able to do that, working across party lines and competing interests, but then keeping in mind what your principles are and how to achieve goals. So it's not either or who wins or who loses, but try to find a solution that satisfies both parties.
And it does give me an opportunity with some seniority in those positions to, as an example, about a month ago, I was in a meeting in Washington with the head of the EPA, the new lady that's assumed that role. And of course, the big deal this now is the EPA wanting to reach out and have more jurisdiction over the waters of all the states. And I ask her, you know, just an aside, when are you going to get over trying to regulate mud puddles?
Oh,
good question.
And she said?
I think she's been burned on that one. So I think they're going to back off and become more realistic.
That's good news for all of us. Yeah. Senator Hanger, why don't you just tell us about a couple of your past achievements in the General Assembly? I'm sure that there are some accomplishments that are particularly dear to your heart and things that you're really proud of or particularly sweet victories. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about a couple?
You know, as I reflect back on that, it's difficult to pick out specific pieces of legislation, but I can look perhaps at bodies of work in certain areas and maybe pull out a couple of bills. you know, on social issues, which your listeners are very attuned to, as you all have your focus. I was very early on, and this goes back to the end of my tenure in the House of Delegates, one of the leaders in opposing abortion and working on measures for parental notification, parental consent, and standards for abortion clinics, health standards for abortion clinics. So I'd have to say, even though initially we weren't successful getting that through the House of Delegates and putting it squarely in front of the Virginia Senate was one of the things that early on in my legislative career I was very pleased to be a part of. Mm-hmm. And this predates even our friend who's carried the torch in recent years, Bob Marshall,
right,
who's carved out a reputation in that area, because back then Republicans had been, well, I say, had their feathers singed a bit on some of the social issues. It's kind of like right now. Yeah. You know, you get you're heading up the hill and you think you're making headway, and then there's a big pushback. The mm-hmm. pendulum swings, and you get criticized for doing the things mm-hmm. that you think are very appropriate. At any rate, so I was very pleased, and I got a lot of recognition for that initially, and ultimately then we were able to pass some of that legislation, and I think we still have work to do in that arena,
sure,
but we've made progress.
Thank well, Senator Hanger, I was going to say to Rita and I just want to clap, give you a clap on that, just for your leadership on, your continuing support for life.
Right. Yes.
Thank you. Now, on typical Republican issues, I've carried in recent years, obviously controversial Second Amendment rights issues for being able to responsibly carry firearms. Now, we obviously we have to be careful about that and not overdoing that, but the Second Amendment is there,
mm-hmm.
and I've carried legislation, significant legislation, to affirm that. I've also carried legislation to foster different segments of the agriculture industry mm-hmm. in the Commonwealth. One of the things I'm particularly proud of in the arena of conservation, and you'll find within the Republican Party now, there are sometimes mixed reviews on what the appropriate role for conservation is, but I think being a conservative, conservation is a part of the responsibility, particularly when you're blessed to live in an area like we are.
Yeah.
But I carried legislation a number of years ago which established a tax credit for conservation, land conservation.
Yes.
And it's become one of the driving forces behind land conservation in the Commonwealth. So I'm very proud of that. It actually is probably the most aggressive program in the nation.
Wow.
And has been responsible since it was implemented in the year 2000, over the last 15 years, in conserving probably 600,000 plus acres. And when I say conserve, the individual property rights have not been taken away from property owners, but they have agreed to keep their land in certain uses. And certainly, I've also carried legislation to create an Office of Farmland Preservation. That's been a focus in preserving the farmland, which, as I stated previously, rural Virginia and the farming interests of Virginia kind of define Virginia and maintain our culture.
So we need to thank you also for helping to keep Virginia beautiful and keep our farms thriving.
For lovers, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Virginia is for lovers.
Yes.
There you go.
Yeah, it is.
Yes.
It is. Virginia is for everybody who wants to come here and behave themselves.
That's right.
I like that.
Let's make that conditional. Okay, well, let's move on to another issue that has caused some concern and give you an opportunity maybe to dispel some of the confusion, and that would be the issue of Medicaid expansion in Virginia. I know we've had this conversation before. We know that many Virginians, certainly in the Valley, are opposed to the expansion of federal programs like Medicaid. I wonder if you could just help us understand what your position is.
It's and that one is one that would take a lot longer than the couple of minutes we're going to vote.
You've got three minutes.
Three minutes. Let me say that how I got in the middle of this debate, and I have a number of leadership interests in Richmond, and one is in the arena of health care. Which falls under a committee that I chair in the Senate Finance Committee. And we have several billion dollars that we allocate for health care. The real issue with this and the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, if you want to call it that, is there is federal legislation in place that changes the dynamic for how hospitals and health care providers are reimbursed. It's my position that first, and I've worked with the Hospital Association, other healthcare providers on this, that we first needed to reform Medicaid. So I've kind of led the charge statewide on this in putting forward an aggressive plan to reform Medicaid.
And you serve on a commission
right,
that is
right.
studying
We set
that.
Up a commission, which I chaired, Medicaid Innovation and Reform Commission. And we've accomplished a lot of what we set out to do. There still is a debate raging, though, because there are some that have legitimate concerns about where we're headed. There are others, quite frankly, from the politics of it, that just want it to fail because they don't like the current administration. They want it to fail totally. I'm not there because I think if this fails totally, then we as a people, our nation, can fail. So even though right now our President Obama, he's liberal, we know that. He suggests and pushes for things that a lot of people in the Valley don't agree with, but he's the president of this nation, and I don't want him to fail. Particularly, I don't want him to fail in reforming health care because we have a dynamic here in this nation and in Virginia where one of the largest contributor to personal bankruptcies is health care. We have a tremendous healthcare industry and innovation, which we can do so many tremendous things here in this nation, but some people can't afford it. Some people don't have access, ready access to that. So you have a situation in Virginia. If you live in Northern Virginia, your life expectancy is probably 15 years greater than if you live in Southwest Virginia. Now, that,
wow.
In my opinion, as a supporter of life, that's an intolerable situation that we need to fix.
You know, I think you could describe this as one of those situations where our human compassion sometimes runs head on into
sure.
the concept of limited government.
Sure, sure. And we need limited government, but given the hand that you're dealt, where the federal government is right now, and if I think we as individuals, and we need to contact our legislators, they really need to get beyond this impasse that they're at and work on reasonable fixes to our health care dilemma.
Is the Reform Commission still in business? Are they still?
It's still in business, but we're performing most of that work within the existing standing committees.
Okay.
So we're going to be meeting shortly.
Well, we'll wait to hear the results of
right.
that.
Yeah, I just want to say that I really understand the difficulty of the situation that you're in as a state legislator who's saddled with certain decisions that have already been made by the federal government.
Right,
and then
right.
you sort of have to figure out how to make the best of it and
right.
make it work for the state within the confines that have been set up, not just with health care, but I know with other issues as well. It seems to me that today state legislators are having to spend more and more of their time in Richmond dealing with federal initiatives and mandates, and that a lot of times you're denied the ability to just sort of start from scratch and figure out mm-hmm. what's the best policy for our state.
Mm-hmm.
So that is why I am so pleased, and you knew I was going to bring this up,
mm-hmm.
that you are a supporter of the Convention of States project. And
right.
we have discussed that on previous programs, so our audience knows a little bit about it. But basically, as you know, the Convention of States project is aimed at restraining the federal government and putting more power back into the state legislatures. Can you tell us just quickly why it is that you're a supporter and you think that's the right thing for us to be doing?
Well, thank you for that question, Rita. And I know, wearing another hat, you've engaged yourself on this issue in a big way here in Virginia. Federalism is important. You know, states' rights are important. Balance that with the fact that our federal government now, I think most people, even those who work in Washington, recognize that something needs to be fixed. And I believe there is not the ability within Congress now to move forward aggressively with, mm-hmm. with what needs to be done, particularly as it relates to a balanced federal budget.
Yes.
And I view this opportunity that we have that was drafted into the Constitution by
yeah.
the Founding Fathers that we could use this provision so that the states can force that action.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm a proponent and for several years have introduced legislation to call for a constitutional convention in a more limited way than some are advocating now, but mine was focused on a balanced budget.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's critical for our nation in the future, that we basically force that fiscal accountability on our decision makers in Washington.
Yep.
The you know, a quick side up for a number of years, I've sometimes people suggest that I get ahead in terms of thinking ahead things that are not ripe yet in term politically. But I think this particular issue is beginning to ripen.
Yes.
And that there's enough force behind it. One of the high profile issues that I struggled with in a bipartisan way, because this came, we were just talking about the Obama administration, but going back to the Bush administration, the No Child Left Behind program,
mm-hmm.
which was forced upon the states. I spoke out very aggressively about that, and in this modern world of electronics, that the fact that I was doing that was conveyed directly to the White House. I got a call
weekend
from the White House. It said, "Senator Hanger, we've been hearing what you've been saying about No Child Left Behind, and I want you to know that it's gone all the way to the top of the food chain here, and the president's pretty upset." And I said, wow. I didn't realize. Well, my point being, we can raise our voice, and it can be heard.
Yes.
And in that instance, I was invited to the White House to talk to the folks up there, and I went. And, you know, it's been a long struggle with No Child Left Behind, and this exercise that many of us are involved now to call this Constitutional Convention has detractors, some from our friends who are looking at the potential downside. But, you know, it's a matter of educating. A lot of these things, I think there was a lot of wisdom in what the Founding Fathers put in there in the Article 5 option, and we need to continue to pursue that.
Right. Absolutely. Well, thank you for standing up for states' rights.
Well, that's a great segue into our next segment here about some of the core issues that the Valley Family Forum advocates and promotes. We've got life, sanctity of life. I don't know if you want to say anything more about that. The abortion clinic regs will be coming up again. So that's one issue, and
I think we've
covered that pretty well. Unless you want
sure.
to add,
no, I'm certainly strong on that, and we need to continue to work those issues.
And the segue, then we're going to talk about marriage, but we're going to defer that for a little bit. You've already mentioned education, No Child Left Behind. That brings us to Common Core. Where do we go? It sounds like you're a strong advocate of local authority and decision-making for our public schools. And I know Sharon has been in the public school system for many years as a teacher. This is her last year, is that right?
Right. My wife Sharon is, she's been teaching second grade, and I think she's ready to spend more time with the family.
So where do we stand on quality education in the public schools, but also in terms of school choice, tax credits, vouchers for those who want to educate their children elsewhere?
Well,
and Common Core, while we're at it.
All complicated there. Yeah, we're going to have to extend your program.
We'll have you come back.
Right. Yeah. We might have to do that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Common Core a little bit. Because really, I think when we look at Common Core, and I know conservatives now, myself included, are concerned about Common Core. But when you get right down to it, Common Core is just kind of an evolution of standards of learning, accountabilities with a common body of knowledge, which we've already implemented here in Virginia. So I think we need to revisit that. We don't have Common Core, but we got something that looks a whole lot like it.
It's imposed by the federal government in large part.
Well, in part through under No Child Left Behind, which I mentioned, but also some of it is coming from within. And early on, when we after this goes back to the George Allen administration, when a lot of this was being done nationwide, but Virginia was a leader in revised standards of learning and you don't want to call it a Common Core, but essentially that's what our standards of learning that basically is. It's a common body of knowledge that we want all the students to be able to absorb and regurgitate in a quick test that they'll take. Well, I think we've overdone it, and over the last couple of years, we've pushed back on a little bit of that. I really believe we need to do more of that because, quite frankly, we don't want the federal government, and I don't think the federal government really has the constitutional authority to dictate education in the states. By the same token, I think we need to allow more flexibility for local school divisions under the umbrella. You know, it's a state responsibility with the local governments, but we really need to allow, with certain guidelines, that ability for local governments to fashion education in the best interests of the citizens in that region.
And what about the parents then who want to opt out of the public school program,
because you know, that's one of the areas where I've had mixed feelings when you start talking about alternative education private schooling, school choice. I think our first and most important effort should be in making sure our public schools are the best they can be.
You, as a state legislator, that
right.
is the part that you're responsible
right.
for, right?
And that's where my focus needs to be. If we do that, I think there will be less problem associated with communities that are struggling then with what the public schools are up to. Because really, you know, our government of, for, and by the people, we are the people. And so theoretically, at the local level, with our local elected school boards, we should be in charge of what our children are being subjected
Absolutely.
To. That's idealistic.
Right.
So we've got, you know, we need to make sure there are options there, as we always had, for private schooling and for, you know, a broader spectrum of learning that we can afford the children.
And we only have 2 minutes, so and this is the biggest issue.
Uh-huh.
Because you mentioned education. I imagine the Supreme Court decision on same-sex marriage is going to infiltrate the educational system in terms of what the textbooks are saying and what the teachers are expected to teach. So I'm just wondering, this is Rita's question, actually, about how the Supreme Court decision now will affect this whole question of religious freedom.
Yeah, I just wanted to get your thoughts on the decision generally and how you think it'll affect our state.
Well, you know, we mentioned early on the founding fathers, but, you know, they opined back then, and it's very true now. We have freedoms in this nation. We have freedom from within to destroy ourselves. Mm. We have, you know, and I have to reflect back on a Bible scripture that's getting more important to me daily when I hear people talking about liberty. Mm. And basically that comes from Corinthians. It says, true liberty can only be found where the Spirit of the Lord is present.
Amen. Wow.
Okay?
Yes.
So that's the problem we have. We have liberty, but a lot of the problems we're confronted with now are the fact that we as a people are losing our religious base. Mm. I don't think the solutions are going to be found in Congress or in the General Assembly in Virginia. I think they're going to be found in the pulpit and with the work that we can do through Jesus Christ to return us to that higher moral ground.
Mm. Well, it recalls the saying of John Adams, too, our Constitution was written only for a moral and religious people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It is wholly inadequate for any other.
Sure. Sure, and that's where it is. A lot of the impositions that we see now on our liberty, and our religious liberties are included in that, are based on the fact that we're not behaving of our own accord. We have to have Big Brother up there making us behave. And so that speaks to what we find in Corinthians. If we are true in our heart, a good people, then we don't have to have a heavy hand above us.
That's right.
Exactly.
You'll be ruled either by the Bible or the bayonet, I think,
right.
one
yeah.
of the Speaker of the House said.
Yeah. Well, before we close, I just wanted to ask you to tell our listeners generally, how does your faith impact your public service in the General Assembly?
Well, you know, we are what we are, you know, and our experiences all come to the table, our what we believe and our relationship in faith is a part of that. It's not always out front, in terms of that, but it's in decision making. It has to be a part of that, and that's something that concerns me in the society that we're in right now. Because just in the relatively short amount of time that I've been involved in public service, our norms have changed, and it's impacting us here in the Valley.
Senator Hanger, our time has run out.
Sorry,
it's gone so quickly. I just want to give contact information for people to contact
sure. you.
They can write to you at P.O. Box 2, Mount Solon, 22843, or they can go to your website, emmetthanger.com, or they can write to you by email, district24@senate.virginia.gov. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I expect you're just going to be flooded with questions. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Right.
And I want to thank our listeners for joining us as well. We welcome your comments and your financial support. You can write to us at Crossroads P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg 22803. You can also review this program on our website at valleyfamilyforum.org. This is Dean Welty for Rita Dunaway saying goodbye. And until next time, have a great week at the crossroads where faith and culture meet.